you very much for that. I worry when we talk about austerity that rightly we worry about people at the very bottom very much, but we tend not to ignore people in the middle and particularly people in the top half of society. You're in the top half of society if you've got a partner and you've got an annual income before tax of anything between 24,000 between the two of you up to 160,000. That's the group I'm talking about. By austerity, I mean all the changes that have happened since 2008, not just government changes, other changes in things that cost you money. The word austerity is funny. What we have now is very different from 1950s austerity, which involved rationing for almost all. It's very different from 1980s austerity, which was half tax rises, half cuts. But I mean what's happened since 2008. There's a series of things. I have too many slides, so I won't go through them all that you can think of. And of course, there are big price rises to come. Half of all young women in Britain go to university. Most of them will be taking out loans to fund their £9,000 a year student fees. Those will have to be, well, somehow repaid. Possibly not, but in the future. So those are some of the middle class effects you can see. But some of the biggest are to do with the cost of housing, particularly for buying houses, not yet for actually paying the mortgage, but for getting one in the first place. I always feel a bit mean to David, but one problem people in the middle of society do have is people at the top taking up quite a lot of the housing, but also escalating the prices at the top. David's actually a relatively modest member of the 1% in terms of his use of housing. This graph is a picture of the country shaped by the value of residential property. It is over £100 billion out because London's got £100 billion, maybe £150 actually now, bigger in the last year and a half. And if you're trying to get a sense of where financial interests personally lie in Britain, that's your image. And of course, members of Parliament tend to own houses in the middle of that bubble. Some people, such as the Governor of the Bank of England, don't like calling it a bubble. I think this looks like a bubble when you draw a map of Britain with each area shaped by the rise in housing. These are the London boroughs. London boroughs combined last year went up in value more than the whole of the North East and North West and Yorkshire numbers I put together. And this was before we got the 17 and then 19 and then 20% annual rises. But it's not a bubble, don't worry. But how on earth can you have a situation in which average incomes have not been going up, in fact have been going down, and in which, and I should have said this earlier, about a year and a half ago the Institute of Fiscal Studies released a report on the income distribution showing that for 99% of us, we had become more equal, our income inequality, our Gini coefficient, had gone back to what it was in 1990. So how come the cost of housing is going up if people haven't got the money to actually pay for it? And that's part of the effects of what I think of as austerity since 2008. A key thing is who's buying housing. And I think this really was unanticipated. I don't think this was a plan to do this. This is research that came out done by Savills, the estate agent to the very well off. They did it, the Financial Times published it, and it was showing that mortgage holders, and most people amongst the top 50% will have a mortgage at some point, have seen their wealth drop by 169 billion since about 2008 because of the fall in the value of housing in much of the country and because they're having to borrow so much more to buy a house. Owner-occupiers have only had a slight increase. Landlords have had a increase in their wealth of 245 billion in that same period. Landlords are just 2% of the population, but landlords have been buying up property after property after property as more and more people need to rent. One thing I should say about this graph from Oxfam that's often not realised is there are huge differences within what's happened within the richest tenth. The richest 1% have got much better off. HMRC released figures about a month ago, showing that from the tax year to April 2013 to the tax year to April 2014, the 1% are their biggest increase in income for many years. It's the rest of the top 10th who've actually shared the drops and the cuts, who've lost a child benefit and so on. Most of the 1% didn't claim child benefit when you could claim it. It wasn't worth the effort. Or maybe they thought it was immoral to claim, but they're not affected by it going because they didn't take it in the first place. And they had a tax cut, of course, from 50% to 45%. There are those same figures in wealth transfer. It is an incredible wealth transfer that's occurred. It could, of course, be blown away in a week, all 15 years. Nobody can predict the housing market. But if London were to crash next week, landlords in theory will be much worse off than they are, but of course they know they can pass it on to their tenants as long as they can get the money out of them. But it's an incredible change, and it's a change that affects the top half of society, because in the bottom half you're largely talking about renting or just managing to scramble your way onto the bottom of the ladder, a very precarious ladder now. Employment used to be permanent and secure, we've got used to precarious employment. Housing used to be permanent and secure, and we've got now used to precarious housing. If the reports from this week in the press are to be believed, then health will be the next one in 10 years. You may not be able to imagine your health service becoming precarious, and not necessarily, maybe depending on whether your local authority decides whether you should get a national health service or not. But that's the direction we need to think about if you're thinking about further cuts and choices, because that's a choice that could be made. I may have got the Social Mobility and Child Poverty Commission may have got the figures wrong here. I need to check, because you were saying one in four in London. In their report, they were claiming now one in four, and this is households with children, so it's a different set. One in four of all households with children in England are now privately renting. And look at the acceleration in that proportion. Now, some of that may be temporary, to do with this very strange nature of the housing market at the moment, and some of them may get out, but that's an incredibly rapid transformation to British society, and that does affect quite a lot of members of the top half of society who are renting with children, particularly in London, in a precarious situation, because you may be in the top half of society, you may say have an income of £35,000 between two of you and have two kids. Another couple who don't have two kids and have an income of £35,000 can afford to pay a little bit more rent than you, because they're not feeding the kids, so they can outbid you for rent. I'll talk about the other stuff in a minute. Here's an old diagram from an even earlier time of austerity I didn't talk about. They've all been different. This was the all taking a step down together, and I think if you want to think about food banks and what happens at the bottom, that's why we concentrate most on what happens at the bottom. Add two noughts to each of these figures. Please come up with a suggestion to me about what we should do about including women and having different symbols other than hats. But you get a picture of today, except that the top 1% have not stepped down. Of the many things that people have said earlier today that intrigued me and I found fascinating, one was about people being aware of their social position, of worrying about what's in their shopping basket, what other people think about them, whether they can cook shows that they are somewhere in the social scale. And I just thought, are we returning back to a time when you know from somebody's hat what class they are? We did become much more equal in dress and so on in the 1960s and 70s, and to a sense in the 80s. And we're becoming less like other countries in Europe, where people simply know how to cook, and you can't tell if somebody's posh in Greece about whether they can know how to cook Greek food. It's just something you do if you're Greek. But I haven't got time for a side, so I'll stay off that. Here's the IFS data about the income distribution that you will be aware of, the vast majority of the public are not aware of, and people do not feel that they are there on the scale. Most people think they're normal and think there are people above and below them in roughly equal measure. Our distribution of income is very unusual. The only country that really compares is the States, where the top 1% now take 20% of all income, despite austerity, or in effect, part of what austerity in the States means is the top 1% take more and the rest of you share out 80% between you, and that's a smaller 80% than GDP used to be. We're on now 15%. Our top 1% are taking 15% before tax, about 10% after tax. They pay a third of all income tax, not all tax, a third of all income tax because they get so much. Other countries, notably Netherlands and Sweden, very, very different. Netherlands down to 6%. You can produce these kind of diagrams. You've got the slides, so I will zip through them. These are remarkable compared to most OECD countries, but not all. This one in the States is using old data because they couldn't draw this when the data came out for 2010, because the bottom 40% of society had actually slipped into the Atlantic and had negative wealth on average. And policymakers at the top of the States, when they found this out in 2012, because there's always a lag between data, began to panic. Because you can't run a society when 40% of people have nothing to lose. And we got changes, and taxes were actually increased in the States. Our zip food are very rich, but we have a disproportionate number of them in this country. Our zip food, because Piketty has done it all. I thought I discovered Thomas Piketty a year ago, and wasn't I clever? And that's pointless now. Just probably a word of caution to you about ever releasing data and then regretting it. ONS did release some data about the entire wealth distribution. They weren't sure. They did pull it back again. I won't tell you the whole story because people worry about politeness, but for me, luckily, George Monbiot decided to stick up on his website and leave it there. We do not know the wealth of the 1%, and that's the lower estimate of it. Somebody was talking about the difficulty of recipes and feeding yourself. And there are lots of things we find harder to do in this country. We are less numerate than people in other countries. Those kind of skills are the skills you need to buy food and to budget and so on. There's a relationship, or appears to be a relationship, between a more equal country like Finland or the Netherlands, again, or an unequal country like England and the USA on something like our overall average levels of numeracy. I'll skip over schools, but we're still spending three times more per child on the 7% of children who go to private schools. We have not had austerity in that. In fact, we've seen private school fees rise. You get differences about what people think about themselves in different countries. There's an amazing relationship between how many people say they're better than average in a country and how unequal it is. And in a way, you almost have to think you're better than average, you're special, you're a better driver, you're better looking. These are the kind of questions that are asked. And there's a danger that austerity and the way we're doing it will make us, I put it crudely, more American in the way we talk ourselves up. And try to make sure that we're not at the bottom. We don't talk about the other options. This is Switzerland, and again the Netherlands. I must stop my obsession with the Netherlands, especially with the football. But here's the income share of the 1% over time in these two countries. Swiss bankers are paid half as much as our bankers. There are different ways in which you can share things out. VAT changes are worse for the poorest half, but still affect the top half of society. Too complicated, again, from the IFS, so I'll skip through that one. Here's the long-term tax changes about taxes at the top. If you're looking at options to do, sorry about the scale. On the bottom, you've got the drop-in top rates of tax since 1960, and on the side, you've got the increase in the income of the 1%. And essentially, those countries which reduce top taxes the most have seen the biggest increase in income in the top 1%. Because the key thing about high marginal tax rates on income tax is not to collect money. What high tax rates do, this is say a 60% to 200,000, 70% to 400,000 income, is they deter people who've got really high bargaining power from bargaining for a high amount. So then that reduces everybody else's feeling that they need a certain amount of money. For instance, just to buy a three-bed house in London because they work in London, because they become cheaper. And it's one way of doing austerity. Here's just one slide on Scotland, because this is part of the debate in Scotland that simply is not being reported in England, because we do not think they will leave. We don't think they'll vote to leave. They may well not. We don't even think they can afford to leave. The reason many Scots, particularly in the Labour Party in Scotland, or which were in the Labour Party in Scotland, and it's very personal in Scotland all this, are talking about voting yes, is because they can't see an option out of our choice our English choice about how to do austerity other than voting yes. So it's an increasing part of the Scottish debate. It's not about nationalism. It's about not going for English-style austerity. They could be fooling themselves. Scotland is remarkably like England. But I just thought I'd point it out because it's a completely unreported debate. And when an academic colleague of mine finally wrote something on it, I sent him an email and congratulated him, said, alas, somebody from England's done this. And he sent me an email back saying, I'm sorry, I've got to confess, I'm Scottish. The lack of interest in the debate is amazing. I'm not going to get through my six slides, am I? There are scary things going up at the top of world income distribution. People all over the world are concerned about inequality. We had much worse inequality in the past. This is simply the income distribution amongst the servants in Blenheim Palace 100 years ago. You can become much, much more unequal. Correlation is not causation, people always say, but it isn't coincidence either when you see lots and lots of correlations. That's all I say about the relationship between wealth and health, other than to point out that Denmark is a remarkably unequal country by wealth. Denmark's a fascinating country to study. Here's a US kind of student graphic on student debt. Our student loan is completely unpayable unless we have a social revolution and those majority of graduates who are female are suddenly paid much, much more than men. Very, very quickly, and we pay everybody else hardly anything at all. 90-10 ratios, it's too long to show that, but we are more unequal than Israel, and our rates of inequality, despite the Gini going down, this rate has gone up because of the 1%. And last of all, this is the relationship between how much the 1% gets and the Gini. The 1% are not an unimportant category. If the 1% take less, the group beneath them has to take less, otherwise they get into the 1%. The group beneath have to take you, so you collapse your society and it saves you a lot of money. It's an option that's not discussed here or how to do it, but it may be an option that increases in importance in the run-up to the election. It may take May next year, and then, depending on the election, it'll either disappear as something of importance or could be quite important after that, in my opinion. Thank you very much for your patience.